It comes from music, it comes from films, it comes from fashion, it comes from moments in time, it comes from mundane, just everyday mundaneness that I see, which I'm able to kind of just express, even if it's like a dull moment of, you sitting in the bathroom by yourself. It comes from just observation of life and seeing all the things that I'm immersed in.
Welcome to the 17th episode of the Ikibi Podcast Season 2. In this episode, we have with us Millie Ghosh, a highly acclaimed photographer known for her unique style of work and vision. With over a decade of experience, she's widely recognized as one of the leading editorial wedding photographers in the industry. She has photographed weddings from all over the world and has been featured in numerous publications such as Vogue and Brides Today. Her work stands out with her carefully composed and artfully executed images and videos with an avant-garde approach. Each moment she captures reflects the essence of the people in them, influenced by a combination of her classic and modern aesthetics, and she continues to break the rules of traditional photography with her niche. In this episode, we speak with her about her journey, her unique style of framing life, what inspires her to break away from the mainstream narrative as an artist, and so much more. We learned so much from this introspective conversation, and we are so excited for you to tune in.
Thank you so much, Millie, for joining us. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. There is so much that we can chat about, but we'd like to go into more detail about you as a person and your art form. So can we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself and what your journey was like to becoming a photographer?
Okay, so it started about 20 years ago, and I'm from Dar es Salaam originally. I was born and raised in East Africa, and I got quite a bit of an upbringing from, this very Indian exposure. Even though I lived in Africa, I got a lot of Indian exposure, all thanks to my parents and also the community that I was growing up in. And so I always felt that there was, there was something missing, in the sense like I never really got that full Indian upbringing, the way Indians would have, in India, like having all the festivals and all the cultural nuances that you get to, you just see it. It's right in front of you. So I always felt that for me, it was like, if I needed it, I had to watch films. I had to like hold on to it. My mom would put me to classes, like whether it was Bharatanatyam classes, even for like 2 weeks or whatever. She would push me, whatever outlet we got, to kind of really get connected to my, my roots is what I did. So I would, I don't know, somehow it just happened that films became a very big part of my life, and I would just watch everything that had come out. And at one point, there was a cassette store very close to my house, which my I could just walk in and rent stuff from. I started that process of like watching every damn thing alphabetically. So I'd go, right from Ashok Kumar to Raj Kapoor to Sanjeev Kumar to, watching all the directors, Rishi Das movies, everything. I just went very much, methodical. I was like, I just have to see everything that's in here. So it was like, that was the, if it was Mahabharat, I would watch it. If it was Ramayana, I would watch it. And that's how I learned Hindi. My parents don't know Hindi that well as I, as much as I do. They're Gujarati. So we speak fluent Gujarati, but I definitely, in comparison to a lot of people growing up with me, I spoke better and I understood better. Because again, that was it. That was my world. It was just subah se leke raat tak. It was just nonstop watching films and then rewatching it. And I would just get, so that's, I'm just giving you a little bit of a context as to how my upbringing was. And academically also, I was not so strong. I mean, I did well, but I just kind of got by. And my entire focus was always just about the visuals I saw in films and music. I danced and I just had I always had an expression for, you know, just creating something with dance and with films. I would enact. I loved acting. I saw everything, like, aesthetically. I could see there was a huge, like, you know, love for, like, colors, because it was so out there. I was like,
yeah,
I would watch Hama Ke Kaun, for instance, and I would see Madhuri. Everything in her room was yellow, including her brush. You know, like, I think growing up, we all saw that, and we would, you know, we would want to be like them. And it was just it's such a larger than life kind of a situation. And again, you know, that time was different. We all looked up to stars, and we all looked up to. I was definitely one of those. I had these big Madhuri Dixit photographs and posters growing up. So I had everything, because somehow my parents also watched all of that content, and I started adapting it and growing into it. And then I moved to Canada, to speed things up a little bit for you. this is how crazy I can get. Anyway, so I went to Canada and I studied communications. And there I really didn't understand what the hell I was doing, because I was like, communications is interesting, but I don't know if I'm suited for it. Like, I was going for journalism, and I never really felt like that was a calling, you know, within my heart. And I didn't know that this was where I was supposed to be. But then I found this very interesting opportunity to work for a nonprofit organization, and that was for production coordinating. So I said, this looks interesting. And there I was making call sheets. I was doing all the basic, you know, logistical work. And I started seeing the process of filmmaking, camera work, editing, and just learned while I was production coordinating, learned all these techniques as well, watching people. That's it. Then I moved to Chicago, because my husband moved. We got married, and, you know, it was time for us to come here. And that's when I started looking actively for jobs, also because we needed to make ends meet. I had, you know, graduated, and I was like, now what do I do? You know, I did 2 years of master's, and then I quit. Personal issues and stuff. I couldn't finish my master's. So it was financial stress. I said, now we need to do something. My husband was under debt as well, in terms of student loans, because we come out of school, people have to pay that. So we were like, you know, hand to mouth in situations, monthly rent, you know, we're just making it happen. And I had to do something about it. So I said, okay, chalo, let me just put all my efforts in this. And I went to the Indian Street in Chicago. It's called Devon Street. And that's where my journey began, really. First 6 months, I was just hustling. It literally was just like hustling. I got a job even as a sari, at a sari shop, folding sari. So I said, let me just do that experience, and let's see what, you know, they had a technique to fold saris, and I tried even, and that didn't last too long, because I started doing other things for them, and they were like, what are you doing? Started organizing everything by, you know, just I tried to make their life easier, but they didn't appreciate it. So I got, didn't last there too long. Fir wahan se I moved into production. There was a mom pop studio. They were looking for a manager, like a studio manager. And it said, like, just somebody who can, you know, take care of the studio and overall, you know, looking at the logistics of everything and helping them with, you know, some small stuff, accounts, light editing and things like that. I said, I can do this. I have some experience from my, you know, my nonprofit time in Canada. I said, I can definitely do this. And I learn more. So I got very eager, and I went in, and it was $5 an hour under the table. You know, that kind of situation. And I ended up doing everything. I was doing, like, I was helping their kid, you know, with their exam. I was helping, you know, taking her to the dentist appointment, and one person doing it all. But that's okay. That's how it starts. And that's how you learn. I was totally fine with it. Never had an issue with that. They were very kind to me. Honestly, I learned so much from them. They both would sit me down, and they would tell me about how the business operates and, you know, what I could learn from it. And, you know, she, the one of the owner's wife actually taught me a lot of like iMovie editing back then. Mm. And, you know, yeah, she would sit down and she would explain, you know, when the bride walks in, because they were wedding photography studio. So they would teach me, like, you know, when the bride is ready to walk, we do slow motion and then we throw petals, like 3D petals. This was 20 years ago. So, you know, you can imagine the standard and the quality of work that we were doing. I was very happy. I was like, wow, you can do this. You can do slow motion. And I learned so much from that experience. And I took a lot with me. Unfortunately, I didn't stay with them for too long because, you know, they had different needs. I had different needs. And I was very much capable to take it all by myself and then move on and, you know, do things with my own mind and expression and freedom. And another girl who was working with that studio, her name is Amna, a very dear friend of mine. She was a photographer. I became the videographer and we just started our journey together. And we had glorious years of just working in the Indian realm, in the Indian Pakistani realm in Chicago. We just started just establishing ourselves as the experts in wedding photography and videography. And it was amazing. It was amazing. It was beautiful that a lot of women kind of just embraced us, even though we didn't have like our own like portfolio. My first job, I did not have my own portfolio. I showed people like what I did with my own wedding edit. I'm like, this is what I can do. And so the bride actually said, I remember her name, Sadia. Sadia said, if you can edit like this, if you can edit my video like this, I know I'm going to be in safe hands. Mm-hmm. So I got my first check from her. It was something like, I think it was a deposit of $300. And I took that check and I drove that night, you know, or that evening back home. And I was calling my husband and I said, I've made it, you know, I made it. Something. I was so happy. I was like, I'm going to take everything, you know, in my hands and I'm done. And sure enough, really, like we did so much work, me and Amna together, you know, her being the photographer, I being the videographer. And then I took minute steps, you know, to make my work better and better. I would take cranes. I would take, you know, Jimmy jibs with me and I would shoot in like nice destination weddings and things just escalated from there. And there were times when it dipped as well. It dipped to a point where koi bhi weddings nahi thi because my pricing went up and I did it all on purpose. I would say that I wanted to establish myself very differently and I wanted to work extremely with a lot of heart and soul. And I noticed and I realized that I would put all my heart and soul into it. So it was like, I couldn't see, you know, night or day. I just had to, somebody's given me this and it's a huge responsibility on my shoulders. So I would be like, I have to give it full justice. So because of those hours and also not having any mentors, so business challenges or trying to do things to like you're learning on the fly, right? Mm. And there's no mentor, there's no reference as well for me to follow. So it's all trying and testing. Is this my expression? Can I edit like this? Mm. A lot of all of that I had to just do myself, figure it out alone. Yeah. So that's when the hours were doubled. It was just no sleeping. I know I've done a wedding for a client where I shot and I edited. Shooting was with a big team, but the editing was entirely on me. And I took 1,600 hours to edit that one client's wedding video. Very proud of it, but a lot of hours went there.
Yeah.
And that's what I was very much like, okay, I want to make something out of nothing.
Mm.
And why it's nothing? It's because it's shot very much haphazard. It's shot like without a little bit, you know, there's some direction, but some clients don't want, a lot of clients did not want the cameras are taking over the event. It can't be like, it should just be like a, you know, like covered all from all angles. And then you need to then put it together. You have to have the strength to like tell it like a story. So I think I almost gave it that Netflix documentary feel with, you know, audio bites and all of that, but layering and timing of the cutting and scoring and all of that was very intentional and thoughtful post. Mm. So it took a lot of my time and effort. So video was a very big journey for me. And at some point, I had to drop that journey because it was becoming a big, big time investment for me. And there were clients who were just, I would also shoot, right, photos sometimes here and there. And I would always pre-wedding, do some pre-wedding photos and stuff. And my clients just started asking for it. They said, why don't you just give us both, like do photography and video together? Because we really just want to deal with you, one person. We don't want to deal with 10 people. So there was a turning point in my career where that had to happen. I had to be thrown in, you know, and my clients were just like pushing me there. Like, you just have to do it. We really want to, we want your gaze.
So when was this?
2010. So that's when I think that was my, I would say that was my first photo, like official, like I'm doing photo and video together. And it was easy for me to take it on because it was a smaller wedding. It was more very intimate. And I love that bride of mine. I love a mom. I loved, you know, the feeling I got at that wedding, the energies I felt. And I, as a photographer, the first time I was like, ooh, I can do this. This is nice. I can do it. So Sid took care of the video. I took care of the photo. And then since then, it's been like that. Like, my husband started just taking over the video. And then I would still do the editing. I would still do. And I did the photography. So it took many, many years to like hone it correctly. And my hours on the editing table just got, you know, harder and harder. And I would say only 3 years back is when I dropped the video editing part also. And I said, I don't think I can do that now anymore because the photo assignments just became bigger and bigger. And they were like, by the time you knew it, 60,000 photos, you know, 50 to 70,000 photos or, you know, on average, I was shooting so much that that itself was like full-time editing, you know, capacity. So I couldn't then. So now we have a team.
Yeah. So tell us about who you are now and what you do now and where you've come to be.
Oh, I'm so many things. I think I'm a... I also spoke about it on TEDx. You know, I was very much the Jane of all, and I spoke about it with a lot of passion about wanting to be multiple things at once. You know, I like the medium of photography. I love filmmaking also. I like video. I just won't be able to do it all myself, but I would want to. You know, so it's like there's no stopping that, you know, it's not like it's the end that I'm never doing video. I will probably come back to it. If there's a project that really excites me, I will definitely go into it. So music videos, I will direct, I will write, I will script. And I've done that also. It's not on my feed, but I'm doing this in the background, honing it. I love music videos. I love telling stories. I love street photography. I also love fashion. I also love editorial, and I love weddings. I feel like I'm just still expressing through those genres and finding myself and loving what I am able to create out of it. So I never like want to put myself into any box and say, I feel like I'm an artist and I'm just living it up, and there's no rush. There's nowhere to be as such. There's no destination. Just enjoy the journey. It just needs to be beautiful and hopefully with more intent, with more purpose, with more meaning. That's all I ask for. And that's all I think. I'm already there. I'm already on that track. I'm already on that path, and I'm just enjoying it. It's like, it's fun waking up and finding something exciting to do and just walking on that journey. And there's never been rush. There's never been any rush. Yeah, I have a lot of ambitions. Of course, I will always be like, I would love to work with, you know, a certain artist. I would love to work with a certain talent. I'm always geared like that. Keep this person, I love their makeup. I love their hair. I love this person loves styling so much, and I can see the way they do it. It's beautiful. I would love to work with them. There are people I feel like I should definitely get a chance to work with them, but there's no rush. As long as I can see clearly, if my eyes are good and physically I'm able to walk and I'm able to hold the camera, I will be shooting until the very, very end. So, yeah, I'm like, I've gotten myself sorted for a very long time. And this to learn and discover from it. There's like, there's big wonder in my eyes. There's a lot of curiosity. You know, what else can I learn? What else can I do? What else can I go deep into? And I am that person. I deep into things. So maybe I go and study and I'll, you know, go and actually learn fine art. Everything is on the card. I'm too...
Many possibilities.
Many possibilities, yes.
Thank you for listening to the Ikibi podcast. If you are enjoying listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikibi.com. That is ikkivi.com. We are a small sustainable business supporting contemporary Indian brands. Our platform is run by an all-women team handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here and let's get back to our episode.
Yes. So tell us about your style of photography.
My style. It's a mixture of, it comes from a lot of, it comes from music, it comes from films, it comes from fashion, it comes from moments in time, it comes from mundane, just everyday mundaneness that I see, which I don't, which I'm able to kind of just express, even if it's like a dull moment of, you know, you sitting in the bathroom by yourself. It comes from just observation of life and seeing all the things that I'm immersed in. And that's why it's very, very important. I tell people all the time, whoever asks me, like, where do you get your inspiration? And I'm like, it's going to your, you know, your art gallery. It's going to a new place. It's visiting all different kinds of locations, traveling, listening to different music and throwing yourself in different situations as well, not your things that are common and comforting. That's why even as a wedding photographer, 10 years ago, I used to tell everybody and I still tell everybody now, cross-pollinate, do other things. You are good at what you do with weddings, fine, but then it's nice to just be thrown in to a situation where now you're on a commercial job and you have to deliver for a makeup brand. Understand that or learn it at least, you know, it will teach you something else. It'll hone your eye and it'll force you to be, because if you are a wedding photographer for a certain set period, it gets in any situation, you can get very comfortable in it because your gaze gets like, you know, tightened up and you're like, okay, I know my job. I have to be decisive at this moment and I have to capture that moment and I always capture it with this mic. You'll get comfortable if you're doing it and you're doing it well and people are receiving it. So I always say, shake it up, go and be, do, like recently I was on a red carpet. I was like, this is scary, you know. I'm like, I've done live events, how can it be so scary? But then I always thought, I was like, there's so many people, there are other photographers, you know, you have to kind of battle your way into it. And I'm like, there's respect for that. There is respect for it. You got to do it. You have to learn those tricks. Maybe it's not for you, fine, but put yourself in those situations where you can see it through and you can understand and maybe learn something from it. So what is my photography? It is a lot of things. It is a lot of things. And I like to immerse myself in many, many situations. Some things I'm good at, some things I'm not good at.
Yeah.
So
one of the things that you said on your website is that you did a lot of introspection about yourself to kind of learn things in your art form and discover a lot of things. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it kind of helped hone your art and your niche in photography?
It's very deep. It's very deep. Introspection is like, firstly, you know, you have to do it every day. You have to ask yourself, how could I do it better? You need to be a hard critic. And I am one. I've always been one. So people get scared sometimes if they want. Like, there was a bit very, very, you know, a very strong personality of mine where people were scared. You know, like, what is she going to say about my work or whatever? But I was very critical. I've been easier on myself now and on other people. But it is something that you must quietly, privately do to open your senses, look around, appreciate other forms of art and artists, other creatives, filmmakers, people who make, who paint, who sketch, who put depth in their work. If you have the ability to appreciate that, you will automatically introspect in a much more healthier way. Mm-hmm. And you'll start understanding where you are and how long you need to get through your journey to get to that point where you can feel good about what you do. So I'm not there yet. I know that. But I'm not hard on myself to be like dismissing my work. I won't dismiss my work. There was a time maybe I did, right? Maybe I was hiding a little bit. I was like, no, we didn't do it right. Or I would just like not put it out there, or I would be doubting myself. So I don't think you should do that. Don't dismiss, but be realistic as to, or at least have the awareness as to where you want to be, and always ask yourself, like, really, has it made that mark? Has your work really, does it hold substance? Does it have meaning? Does it have the depth that you want? Hmm. Everybody need to, but you have to know that. And for me, it's an everyday process. Introspection on immediate work that I do. I would shoot something, I would look at it and I'd be like completely detached. And then I look at it as another person looking at it. Like, is this really valuable to me? Does it have a point of view? Does it transcend time? I ask those questions, very serious mm-hmm. questions. And no, a lot of times it doesn't meet those standards maybe. And I look at it and I'll be like, that's okay. I work harder. I have mm-hmm. to work harder. And sometimes, you know, what you have here, it's very difficult to execute what you've got in your mind. And I can go into a shoot thinking, oh, I'm just going to make it. I'm going to make it epic. And I know this is my vision. And okay, try better. Try harder. Try making sure that you're organized better, or, you know, your communication is better. So all that is in process, and you can just kind of let go with ease. Like, it's okay.
What is something that goes wrong in a shoot?
Oh,
like, I mean, you said that it went upside down, right? From what you had in mind and your vision, and things kind of went upside down. What is one thing that went wrong in that particular shoot?
It's a different energy, right? The person's energy, like whoever you're photographing, for instance, and it might be a hurdle to just like get over maybe that ice breaking, you know, maybe you have to deal with that because you're in the business of, you know, people pleasing in a way. As a photographer, you have to be you've got to be a good person inside. You have to also know, you need to know how to be with people, and mm-hmm. you have to, there's a psychology aspect to it, right? With whoever's in front of me in my camera, I need to be able to make them feel comfortable. They have to feel light. Kabhi kabhi, that lightness doesn't, there's a lot of tightness. A lot of times my wedding world is filled with real people who've never faced cameras ever. And this is the first time. And I want to be able to not just take a beautiful shot, but I want to make them look badass. So I'm bringing this whole psychology element in there. And I'm thinking we'll have to break ice and do it before, so that while I'm getting into the shoot, I've already kind of prompted them to be in that space. I use my music. I'll transport them. It can be that maybe they're stressed. Maybe they've got overwhelmed with a lot of stuff and they're not there exactly where I want them to be, mentally focused and completely zoned in. So that can be a challenge. And
that was actually one of the questions I had, was when I looked at your work, and a lot of the wedding work, I was like, these look like models. These are not real people. Like, how do you get them to be like models? Like, are these real people or are you just shooting models?
A lot of them don't have camera experience. They've not been on camera. And some do. Some, it's a mixed bag of, you know, both. And they have to feel comfortable with me. I have to feel comfortable with them. I have to love them. All my brides have got to feel that connection with them. So make up nature of say, I try prompting them. I will use music. I'll have a lot of back-end discussions and consulting time with them. I will show them the thing that I feel posing-wise would be really good for them. That's going to give them good body language. That will help them with their expressions as well. If they need a little bit of more hand-holding, I'm happy to give them that. I'm happy to speak it through and address concerns, like whether they want a certain side of their profile more prevalent than the other side because they're not very happy with left or the right, or maybe they have ears they don't want to show, they have, you know, concerns that they want to address. And those are things that I love talking about because we have to, you know, be transparent with each other, and they should not fear the camera, they should not fear me, they should not have that. It should just be like a friend. The camera needs to be a friend, and the gaze needs to be very supportive, very gentle, so that they see it like, oh my God, I'm fine. Whichever way she goes, I know she's going to make me look good. That trust has to be. So I am very blessed that that's absolutely, I've never had a bad experience. But like I said, there are challenges because a lot of times you cannot take that burden off in a wedding, in a real-time situation. There's a lot of, you know, other things that elements come and cross. Yeah. You know, your bridesmaids or your moms, everybody's around and you feel a little, you know, overwhelmed. And ultimately, you know, if they are connected to the music, again, I know this beforehand. I will otherwise not play music that they are not used to hearing or they don't have any connection to. So my playlist will be kind of selective.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you hear music like that, your heart will start melting. Your BPM, you know, is a little bit more in control. Your heart rate is more in control. So you can surrender easily, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
You know?
No, for sure. But music does its work.
Does its work. It's healing in some ways. Yeah. And it's also very, I've been told, it's very transporting. So a lot of times my bride and groom, I've shot in the thick of like a haldi, for instance, you know, and the whole parties enjoying themselves, and I'm working with the bride and the groom to take their portraits on a stage which is seen by everybody, sab dekh rahe hain, right? But I've got the ability, or they tell me ki we are transported, we are happy, and that's, you know, that's reaffirming to me that okay, now we can keep going. Otherwise I don't like disturbing my bride and the groom when a real is happening, because they need to make moments and memories with people, with their friends and their family. So I'm very cognizant of that. And in fact, I keep telling them also, like, we've got to balance this, because when you look back into the photos that I finally give you, yes, you want to see your beautiful portraits and those veil shots and all of that stuff, but then you want the moments with your friends and family, the warm stuff. When you even flicking the pages together, by the time the album comes or whatever, you want to remember the stuff that happened naturally, mm-hmm. that was caught, versus just like the shots that make you look beautiful and model-esque or whatever. So
yeah,
I do struggle for both, and I'm happy that, you know, they understand that, you know, the conversations are always around, let's try to do this in 5 minutes or 10 minutes so that you have more time with everybody.
Yeah.
And then
we
can do more interactive, fun stuff with your friends. And if it doesn't happen, I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
I will make it happen. So.
Nice. So I'm going to pull you out of the photography part of it, but I want to understand a little bit from your perspective on the photography industry as a whole. And we see it kind of shifting, and it's becoming more inclusive, whether it's, you know, gender-specific conventions or women leading the way in general. What are your thoughts on that, you know, in terms of what you feel, where the fashion industry, where the photography industry is headed, and what kind of progress you've seen over these years?
Oh, huge.
In terms of being inclusive.
Oh, it's huge. I already see a lot of difference from when I started, and I was probably the only like female videographer slash photographer, to now seeing so many women. In India, I see a lot more. Here also, I do see quite a lot of women in the photography industry, both in, you know, in the, I mean, I don't know which context you're talking about, because of course I'm an Indian wedding photographer working in the Indian, not that I put that, you know, label out there. I'm open to all, but I keep circulating in that industry more. But if you're talking about the American photography wedding industry, there's so many women. And I think they're doing just as well. So I feel like there's enough. I think the if you're looking at like the attention, it's equal. I feel it's mm-hmm. equal. I think your work speaks at the end. Maybe there was a time when it was male dominated. We could have that conversation maybe 10 years back. We could have said that it's a little, it feels like heavy male dominated, but I don't think it's like that anymore. I think it's whatever you are putting out there. And if it really lines up with publications, or if it lines up with photo enthusiasts, and you really are able to speak something with your photography, it doesn't matter. You know, gender does, it should not come. And I don't think it comes. But yes, it happened to me when I was, you know, starting out. Of course, I was pushed by a male counterpart, you know, person, just because he did not want me there. I was pushed literally at the wedding, like thrown down, like literally onto the ground. So, but that was 20 years ago, you know, it mm-hmm. was 20 years ago, where it was such a strong male dominated industry that they would not allow a female to enter. And they'll do anything in their power to, you know, hold you down and throw you out. And yeah, those things happened. But I didn't think that it was ever going to come in my way. I never thought it would come in my way, and it never did. So I always look at it from like karma chakra, just keep going. People will see it. So gender really does not come into the play over here.
Mm. Where do you see yourself in the next few years in terms of being an artist, and what other amazing projects can we expect from you?
I think I touched upon the music video thing, right? I am quite interested in going into that realm. I think there's a lot there for me to talk about, speak about, and work with artists, like independent artists. I think I just want to go into that space. Maybe that will happen soon. Let's see. I've already done it, but it has not been showcased. So we'll keep working on that, and or keep honing my. First, I have to hone myself there, you know. So maybe fashion, for sure. It's exciting because, you know, you're talking about a moment in time now, and you're celebrating it. And, you know, it could be designer's work, or it could be, you know, a stylist, or it could be working with a really talented makeup artist or a hair person doing beauty shots or doing any of that. So I'm open to beauty, fashion, editorial, commercial work, music videos. And maybe a feature, maybe a short feature. So mm-hmm. all of that in the next 20 years, hopefully. I can't say what's going to happen when, because I don't know myself, but all of it.
Nice. That's exciting.
Yeah. And keep expressing, basically. Keep expressing until its point. You know that you've been able to convey your message. You've been able to convey your thoughts, and in a very artful way. So I feel I've just started. I always feel like I've just started. I just know how to, you know, I know how to do this, you know, today, and hopefully tomorrow I'll know better.
So what advice, my last question to you is, what advice can you give aspiring photographers just starting out in the industry, and how can they be more respectful and, you know, authentically include diversity and representation in their work? So not just in wedding photography, but in general.
I think personal work. If you start always thinking about, I'll wait for the commission work to come my way, it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think I might have made that mistake, in my career earlier on as well. I said, but what? Why would I do this? I'll wait for the right opportunity. Don't wait for those right opportunities. I really think that's a waste of time. You pick up your camera and start doing personal work. Work with people who you already know, and make relationships. You have to. It's all about relationships. This whole industry is about that. So build relationships with models, with real people, anybody who you feel like you want to work with, that are already around in your corner, or if there aren't, then message them on Instagram and just offer your time, offer your service, and be there, present for any situation. If it comes your way, just do it, because you have to keep honing your eye. So even if you get a chance to say you want to be a fashion photographer, but somebody's asking you to shoot an event, but you know that there might be people over there who can help you, who could probably, introduce you to other people, take those opportunities. Take every opportunity like that. I think it is the most important thing: relationships and personal work. Karte jao, and you will definitely cross a lot of boundaries and get notice and get visibility, because all of that is important. You have to be strategic, you have to be visible, you have to have friends in the industry, you have to make those friends, you have to show your work and show your talent and keep showing your talent, not just once a month, but as much as you can. In your own capacity, without spending too much money, because I know everything you do requires investment. Time to rene do, it's fine. Keep giving your time investment. But if it's a lot of monetary investment, then you need to come up with creative ways. Don't shoot in a studio, shoot in a real location, and show your skill set, and make sure that everybody around you is happy. All your collaborators with you are happy. They're getting what they need. They're able to also showcase their talent. So it's just, everybody's just kind of like helping each other out. And it takes time. It does take time. But if you keep pushing out your personal work, things that are meaningful to you, then people will take notice right away. I don't think I'm doing it enough. So I know that I need to give that advice to myself. I need a lot of personal work out there that keeps showing people what I really want to say, and just hope that other artists, other collaborators, other people can see that, and then maybe we can, build from there. So.
Yes. Thank you so much, Millie, for having this conversation with us. We really love your work, and I'm excited to see what you come up with in the near future. Especially those music videos sound really exciting and seem like you're really perfect on that path. So I'm excited to see what you come up with.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikibi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikibi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikibi.